Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Beat. Mikel Arteta's side warmed the majority of the 60-odd thousand inside the Emirates Stadium last night as they hit Lons for six to seal their place in the knockout rounds of the Champions League. To discuss the emphatic win and look ahead to Saturday's visit of Wolves, I'm joined by Football London's Kai Kainak and Simon Collings from the Evening Standard, and we will, of course, round things off with another instalment of Guess the Gooner. Simon, was last night's performance, rather than result, something Arsenal and Arteta needed at the moment?
Yeah, I think it was a timely performance. There's been a lot of talk, isn't there, around the sort of style of play and this sort of pragmatic shift that Arteta's been accused of bringing on. I mean, he stressed before the game in the press conference that it wasn't a deliberate, you know, ploy. It's something that's happened because of the way teams in the Premier League have sat deep and doubled up on the wingers and made it difficult. And I think this was a case in point and sort of proved Arteta's claims that sides in Europe and Lons in particular last night have decided that the way to play Arsenal is play a high line and leave Saka and Martinelli one-on-one, and they got duly punished for it. And I think the game against Wolves on Saturday will be very different to that. But I think this was just a reminder that this Arsenal attack, if it's given the opportunity, can really punish teams. And yeah, I was slightly baffled by the way Lons set up and the fact that even as the goals were flying in, they didn't really try and do anything to change it. And yeah, rightly punished by Arsenal.
Kai, Mikel said before the game about being stuck in traffic and also mentioned not scoring enough early goals, but they seemed to move through the gears quite quickly last night, didn't they?
Yeah, Arsenal looked really good from the off. It was actually, I'd say, a little bit of a slow start in terms of, I think, Lons were trying to defend a bit. And then once Arsenal got that early goal, like Arteta was saying, this pre-match presser that Simon referenced there, they were able to let the floodgates open. And Lons didn't really seem to have too much interest in defending deep, and it left lots of space. And Kai Havertz scores again, as the song has been stuck in my head all night. And yeah, a really good start for Arsenal. And I think for Havertz in particular, it's the kind of goal that Arsenal have been wanting to get him scoring. It makes a big difference when he's further up the pitch and closer to the opposition goal. It may not sound like rocket science, but the closer you get him to the opposition goal, the more likely he is to score. And he's made a huge difference for Arsenal in the past few games. And I don't think you can underestimate the importance of that first goal for Arsenal last night, because once they got the first, it was really a case of how many do they want. And Lons surrendered quite meekly.
Mikel said in that press conference that he still thinks there's something to prove as a manager in Europe. This group was never really going to provide him with a chance to do that, was it? So what does he need now, do you think, within the realms of the Champions League? And how far does he need to take Arsenal this season?
Well, I think, you know, that is an issue with him has been sort of knockout football in Europe, hasn't it? He's not, I mean, other than that run to the semi-finals, which, you know, I think has to be caveated because of it was played during COVID times and there weren't any fans. And I mean, I think Arsenal had some of their home games in Athens, so that was a bit of a weird time. And, you know, other than that, he's not had a great record in knockout football. So, I mean, I think for Arsenal, they should definitely be looking to make the quarterfinals at least, considering they're going to get a team that's come runners up. And I think the semi-finals as well should be a chance if the draw opens up nicely. I appreciate this group hasn't been the greatest test for them, but I think, you know, looking at teams around Europe, I think they are probably one of the best eight teams in Europe, and they shouldn't really fear anyone that they draw, because I think on the night they can outplay anyone. And if teams continue to play the way that sides in this group have, where they've been happy to have a go at Arsenal, then it should open up for them. And I think the way that people like Saka and Martinelli have sort of adapted on their debut campaigns in the Champions League should give a lot of confidence. And yeah, they've passed this first test with flying colours, really.
Kai, this wasn't really a Champions League group, was it? In terms of it felt very much Europa League in all but name. But we've seen in the past, I mean, we're going back a few years, but when Arsenal got through the group and then struggled against the bigger names. But that's what the Champions League's about, isn't it? It should be about wanting to face these bigger teams from now on. They don't want to dodge these teams. It is about testing yourself against the very best, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Without being too disrespectful to the other teams in this group, I don't even think they'd be be out of place in the Europa Conference League group, I don't think it would have been too shocking to see this trio of teams in that competition. So Arsenal have been given a real touch of luck when it comes to their draw in the Champions League, and they've been able to make themselves look pretty good. And the reality is they probably should have qualified the game before this, because they probably should have beaten Lens away in France. They didn't get one of the big hitters in Europe to really go away and say, look, this is something we can do. We can really prove ourselves, and it doesn't matter who we're playing against. We can go against the best teams in Europe, and we can go toe-to-toe with them, and we can beat them. I don't think Arsenal have really had that yet. They've not really had it in the Europa League, like Simon was saying there. And yeah, this season's Champions League hasn't given them the opportunity for that. The round of 16 could do. There is a very potentially mouth-watering prospect of a tie with PSG in the offing. So, that's the nature of the Champions League. It's all about the draw. It's all about how lucky you get. But at the same time, if you look at Inter Milan's run to the Champions League final last season, Arsenal can only beat what teams are in front of them. And if they continue to do that, I think, if you look at the other English teams in Europe, and I'm sure we'll get onto that in a bit, but how they're faring against teams that they're expected to beat, we shouldn't take it for granted that Arsenal are, doing so well and have qualified with this group, from this group, top of it with a game to spare. It's not the easiest thing in the world, even if the group was relatively fortunate.
I think Kai hits on a good point there, really, Simon, doesn't he? They could only beat the teams in front of them. They did that by and large, other than that loss in Lens. They went to Sevilla, who weren't supposed to be their biggest rivals in this group, and actually outplayed them and were much better. But the fact that you see Newcastle are struggling, I know that's a difficult group. Manchester United keep throwing it away in Europe as well as in the Premier League. But these group of players almost needed that little, I suppose, entryway into the Champions League, didn't they? There's so many of them that hadn't played in it before that this could actually have been a good way of slowly building up to then facing a potential heavyweight like PSG in the next round, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think it was quite a nice sort of soft launch, if you want to call it that, into the Champions League. If you look at the teams they could have got in that pot one, to get Sevilla, I think was a pretty nice touch. And also the travel involved was pretty good. Even Eindhoven, which is a dead rubber now, they went there literally last season. So yeah, I think it all played into Arsenal's hand, but they still needed to get the job done. And after that game in Lens, where they lost, the sort of group suddenly looked a bit like it might get a bit complicated or messy, and the way they sort of have steadied themselves since then, they've not really been sort of challenged in any games. And I think a lot of it has been the way they've sort of attacked the matches. I know the opposition teams have enabled them to, but they feel like they've really started fast in games. They've scored by halftime in every single match. I think in three of the five they've scored in the first 20 minutes. They've properly gone at teams and attacked the competition, and maybe that's part of the incentive, the fact they haven't been in it before. But yeah, just think the way that they've addressed it will please Arteta the most, and the fact that they've been so efficient in getting it done. And I think it is a massive boost, that Eindhoven game being an absolute dead rubber. I mean, PSV are through as well, that particularly having the chance to rotate players around Christmas is pretty rare for some teams. And I think Arsenal are getting just reward for their hard work, really.
Gabriel Martinelli scored a fine goal last night, and even this pod, but there's been a lot of talk about Bukayo Saka on the other flank. Kaya, does the Brazilian's contribution sometimes get a little bit overlooked purely because of just how good Saka is on that other side?
Yeah, probably. I think that's probably a fair statement to make. I think Bukayo Saka is arguably the best right winger in world football now. He's up there with the likes of Mo Salah, and there's very few people who are on his level at the moment. Martinelli, I wouldn't say, is on that level over on the left-hand side. And I think he has had maybe a slightly slow start to the season. And it's interesting that when Gabriel Jesus is back in the team, Gabriel Martinelli is a totally different player. He got the assist for Saka's goal. And, it was fortunate in the way it bounced onto Saka. But that was all created by Martinelli. And the finish for his goal, the way he picks it up is basically on the halfway line to go straight to the byline, well, not quite to the byline, but to the penalty area with that level of speed, then have the wherewithal to cut inside and finish and execute that shot. It's not an easy shot to do. And it was a really good goal from him. And he looked really good last night. And it's interesting that Si spoke to Bukayo Saka in the mix zone at Brentford, and he was talking about players doubling up, and Martinelli has definitely been a victim of that. The wing is getting doubled up on at Arsenal, and you see that when he's got a bit of space, he's a really, really dangerous player. There's not many players more dangerous than him in European football, and I think last night we finally saw that again. And I think he needed it, because he's only got one goal in the Premier League. He's been really good in the Champions League for Arsenal, but he's only got that one goal in the Premier League, which is obviously the winning goal against Manchester City. But Trossard is coming for his place. Havertz can play on the wings. Jesus has played on the left wing. And Ketchy's played on the wings at times. So it's not necessarily nailed on that Martinelli is going to be starting every single game going forward. So he needs these kind of games to just remind Arteta, look, this is what I can do. So, you know, keep me at the forefront of your mind. Keep me in your starting 11. And generally, he's responding quite well.
Yeah, I said on the pod maybe 2 or 3 years ago that he reminded me a bit of a young Ronaldo in the sense that he could take players on. He was really exciting, but he didn't. His end product wasn't as good. And I still don't think we've seen that. I mean, he's still only 22, isn't he? But we still haven't quite seen that step up to that next level yet in terms of goal scoring and things like that. Simon, Leandro Trossard arrived in January and provided proper competition for Martelli. And as Sam Dean said on the pod on Monday, Saka really doesn't have that. So do you think that challenge of having Trossard in particular has helped Martinelli up his game?
I think so. There was definitely a period. I remember, I think it was sort of January, sort of February time, wasn't it? Like when Trossard came in and Martinelli actually went out of the team. And Mikel was put to him that, oh, you know, Martinelli's been dropped, which he didn't take very well. He was more to say he'd been rotated. But Martinelli actually came out of the team for a couple of games and Trossard looked brilliant. And I think it actually sort of lit a fire under Martinelli, thinking like, hang on a minute, you know, I've got someone here who's really competing for my place, and it drove him on. And it does give Arsenal a completely different option. I think there isn't, on that left side, I think the good thing that they've got with Martinelli and Trossard is that they're very different players. You know, Martinelli's so direct, Trossard, you know, a bit more sort of back to goal and stuff. But I think what we've seen certainly from Martinelli is that when he has the space, he can create real problems. But the contrast with him and Saka is that I think Saka has found a way, even when he's doubled up on, he can still produce great numbers. I mean, I think it's now 17 goals and assists this season in 19 games. Whereas Martinelli, other than the Champions League, when he's had that space, he's really sort of struggled to make an impact. So I think that for him is probably the next step of his game, is finding a way that when you're doubled up on that, you can still be as effective. And probably it's something he needs to take a leaf out of Saka's book on.
And then just finally on Martinelli, guys, just a one-word answer here for you. Arsenal in the Champions League final at Wembley. Kai, I'll come to you first. Who starts, Martinelli or Trossard?
It's a one-word answer. That's a really difficult question. Martinelli probably just about for now still.
Simon, do we agree?
Yeah, Martinelli, I think, starts.
Time now for Outside of Arsenal. We trialled this on Monday for the first time, where each of our guests is given a topic and has to argue why they've come down on a particular side of the fence. We like to keep this quite brief, but we'll come to you first, Kaya. Manchester United should re-sign David De Gea after another poor night for Andre Onana.
No, they should not. I don't think necessarily replacing De Gea was the wrong thing to do. I think the wrong thing they've done is replacing him with Andre Onana by the looks of things. And I think Onana's best skill set, his best asset, is his ability with his feet. And that's clearly what Ten Hag wants. He wants that kind of goalkeeper. And I think Andre Onana is suffering a bit from maybe just thinking a bit too much about what other people think of him. And if he just focuses a bit more on his game, I think there is a really good goalkeeper in there. Last season with Inter Milan, he was probably the best goalkeeper in the Champions League as they reached the final. So I don't think re-signing David De Gea is the answer by any stretch of the imagination. I think if Manchester United do go on and get another goalkeeper, it has to be a goalkeeper who's as good with his feet, if not better.
Yeah, I was about to make an Aaron Ramsdale joke. Simon, your question is, Jude Bellingham is currently the best player in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty close to it if he's not. I would argue whether he's the best player or not, I think you could debate, you know, Erling Haaland or likes, but I would say he's the most influential player in Europe. Certainly for Real Madrid and England, just the ability he has in big games at the moment where he's basically deciding them. I think he's the most influential player in any team he plays in. Like, he's just deciding big games all the time. I would think so. And I mean, for England, it's amazing field to have him. I mean, Harry Kane's another player put in that conversation. But I think, yeah, Bellingham right now for me, yeah, it's probably right up there.
Yeah, we're very much not the England beat, but I think if you've got Bellingham, Kane and Saka, then Southgate's not got a lot of excuses to not go really far into that tournament next year. Right, Wolves are next up for Arsenal. After the result on Wednesday, Simon, is this a good chance for Arsenal to also move through the gears in a Premier League game as well?
I think it's going to be a very different game to Lons. I would be stunned if Gary O'Neill's sat in the Midlands thinking, watching that and thinking like, yeah, that's the way to play. Let's go at them. They'll come and make it very difficult for Arsenal. I think they've done well against big teams this season. Obviously beat Manchester City. Like to play with a sort of back three and frustrate. So I think it will be very hard for Arsenal. But I think they need to look at this run they've got now, this Wolves and losing game as a chance, really, when a lot of their rivals have got big games, you know, City playing Spurs, to try and sort of build up some sort of lead at the top of the table. And it'll be a test of what Arteta's been talking about. You know, he's been talking about the need to find a way in these games when teams are playing a low block. And this will be another examination of it. I think they're going to need to try and work out a solution of what they can do when teams sit deep. Because right now they haven't quite found it. And I think Havertz is going to be a part of that. I think we saw that against Brentford, but that is the next evolution from Arsenal, to break down teams that sit deep. And once they've done that, you know, they're going to be a real unstoppable force.
Right, Simon mentioned there about the Wolves' results so far this season. They've only won four league games, but one of those has come against Spurs and one of those has come against Man City. So what does that tell us about this Wolves team?
Echo everything he says. I think Wolves are going to come to the Emirates and they're going to sit deep and 2-8. So that shows that they're not planning to come and play free-flowing, expansive football when they come to play Arsenal. They're going to sit deep. They're going to try and frustrate. They'll double up on Saka and Martinelli if it is those two wingers who start. They'll do everything that Brentford tried to do when it comes to trying to stop Arsenal. And it is up to Arsenal to try and overcome that. And it'd be lovely if they can do that with a flourish and in some style, and they can take the confidence from the 6-0 win over Lons into that game. But again, like Simon was saying, I don't expect that kind of match. I think it will be a tighter game. I think it might be one of those where it's 0-0 at halftime and it gets a bit nervy towards the end. But it is a game that Arsenal have to win, because their title rivals are all playing each other at this stage of the season. It's a good time for them to start getting points on the board. And as you go into this run of fixtures, where I think there's 7 games Arsenal have in December, if you can get a little gap at the top of the Premier League, if you can get 4 or 5 points and you can afford to have that cushion of maybe dropping points in one of those games around Christmas.
Simon, what do we make of Gary O'Neill? He seems to be someone that is well appreciated. When he first got that job, people weren't particularly happy about it, but he seems to carry himself very well, doesn't he? Especially in the face of so many VAR decisions going against his team. I mean, Arsenal fans and managers and the whole club apparently are putting out statements about the PGML and stuff. But Wolves have really been done dirty by VAR this season, haven't they?
Yeah, I think more than anyone else, they feel like the ones who would have the most grievances. And I thought he did speak well on Monday, because, I mean, that could have been the moment where, you know, he absolutely flipped, and he kept himself as measured as he could be. Now, I think he was right in the way he said that, you know, that was the night that probably turned him against VAR, but he didn't come out absolutely sort of ranting and raving. But I think for me, as a coach, I think he sort of, I thought he was unlucky to lose a Bournemouth job. I think when he overtook that, everyone just sort of assumed he was on a hiding to nothing and they would go down. He kept them up. And yeah, he sort of created a very sort of solid teams, difficult to beat, difficult to break down, seems to get very good sort of team spirit among them. And I think he's done a decent job at Wolves, considering the sort of bad lucks they've had go their way. And yeah, I think for Arsenal, it won't be an easy game. Probably another one of those afternoons at the Emirates where they're sort of have to break teams down, struggle to get going a bit. But yeah, I've been impressed with him. I think he's done better than I think people thought he would when he got that Bournemouth job. And I think he deserved to have another crack at a Premier League team this summer.
Very much the VAR derby on Saturday, won't it? It'll be interesting to see if anything goes to the screen. We finish, as is our wont, with a round of Guess the Gooner. I'll read out a list of clues that link to a former Arsenal player. It'll be up to Simon and Kaya to jump in after each clue and see if they can work out who I am describing. So let's play Guess the Gooner. I won 2 league titles in my homeland. I moved to England as a 17-year-old for a fee of £900,000. I provided more assists than any other player during the 2015-16 Europa League. I made my competitive debut as a substitute for Samir Nasri. I was part of the squad that won the Euro Under 19 Championship in 2012. But I went on to only make one senior appearance for Spain. In that same year, in 2012, I was named Simon Collins.
No, it can't be. No. I was going to say Santi Cazorla, but it can't be Santi.
Same year, I was named Young Player of the Year at Manchester City. I later...
Stop.
Kaya?
Is it Dennis Suarez?
It is Dennis Suarez.
Oh,
very well done. Very well done. You run out of clues. I think both of you would have got it from this one. I later made my Arsenal debut against Man City, replacing Alex Iwobi in a 3-1 loss. And
unforgettable.
I famously never made a start in the Premier League for Arsenal. So there you go.
What a signing.
Kim Kallstrom in the mud.
Very much so. I think I would have had more of an impact on the Arsenal season if they signed me in January, to be honest. That's all for today. Join us on Monday, where we will squeeze in a pod between the Wolves game and Tuesday's trip to Luton. Also, keep an eye out next Wednesday, when we will drop the first Arsenal Beat special of the new season. Ahead of the game at Aston Villa, we'll be taking a deep dive into the managerial career of Unai Emery, from his humble beginnings, his Europa League glories, and then why ultimately things failed for him at Arsenal. Stay safe, everyone.